WrestleMania 11, the kickoff to our second decade of the new generation, is only 2 weeks away. Sunday, April the 2nd at 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 Pacific, from the sold-out Hartford Civic Center and exclusively on pay-per-view. Pick up the phone, just the receiver part. Call your local cable company right now. I mean, Hollywood's biggest stars have cleared their calendars to join us, and the action is going to be truly spectacular. Oh, and by the way, one thing I forgot to mention. WrestleMania is the crown jewel of the World Wrestling Federation. And after what you just saw between Kama and Steve McMichael, at WrestleMania, almost anything can happen, and probably will. Man, let's begin with the championship match. Big Daddy Cool strides down the aisle with the gold draped over his monstrous frame to meet the challenger, Shawn Michaels, of course, with his bodyguard, Sid, as his protector. Two former friends and tag team champions have gone their separate ways. However, their paths will cross again with the title on the line at WrestleMania 11. Big Daddy Cool Diesel remains confident he can retain the gold and defeat the Heartbreak Kid. But Shawn Michaels and Psycho Sid see things a bit differently. Just ask him.
Well, I'll be. The World Wrestling Federation champion Big Daddy Cool is going to grace the World Wrestling Federation with his presence when he gives a live interview with Vince McMahon next Sunday. Whoa, that's a rare sight. Big Daddy Cool and the Vin Man one another. What a couple of suck-ups. Well, I got news for you. Two guys that suck up to absolutely no one are the Heartbreak Kid and Big Sid. We make our own rules. And the funny thing is, sometimes even we don't follow them. Rest assured, Big Man, Big Daddy Cool, World Wrestling Federation champion, you got an interview? Well, the Heartbreak Kid and Big Sid want to hear it, and we will, oh yes, we will be in the building.
Man, what a night this is going to be. Intercontinental title also on the line as Double J Jeff Jarrett with the underhanded roadie in his corner squares off against the former champion, the bad guy Razor Ramon. And in light of what we saw earlier on here tonight, there is no question Razor is sick and tired of the roadie. You will also see the one and only Hitman Bret Hart step into the squared circle one more time with Mr. Bob Backlund in an I Quit match. The question remains, is Bob Backlund ready for the fight of his life? But Backlund claims that question is a rhetorical, mean-spirited attack on his individualism, and he does not have the proclivity to surrender. You will also see the unearthly Undertaker with Paul Bearer, but without his urn, face the mighty King Kong Bundy. Now, the Undertaker has a few choice words for the cornerstone of the Million Dollar Corporation.
Ted DiBiase, King Kong Bundy, how dare you violate one of my Undertaker's prized possessions, the sacred urn! With every birth certificate comes a death certificate, and yours will be signed at WrestleMania!
King Kong Bundy, the power that you hold in that urn draws you ever closer to your final demise. At WrestleMania, you come face to face with the Reaper. I'll collect my urn, and I'll fill it with the soul of King Kong Bundy.
Man, the classic confrontations just keep on coming. Talk about a powerhouse tag team. Made in the USA, Lex Luger and the British Bulldog, Davey Boy Smith, team up to take on Jacob and Eli Blue. All these matches and more make up the greatest card in the history of the... And I'll tell you, that's saying something. How about a little Hollywood firepower for you? We all know the star of the hit TV show Baywatch, Pamela Anderson, will be in the house with Shawn Michaels, right? Well, we'll also see Nicholas Turturro of ABC's award-winning NYPD Blue. You'll see Jonathan Taylor Thomas, who plays Randy on Home Improvement with Tim Allen. How about the gorgeous Jennifer McCarthy from MTV? They will all be a part of the biggest night of the year, known as WrestleMania, just 2 weeks away. Sunday night, April the 2nd, totally live from the sold-out Hartford Civic Center, 7 o'clock Eastern, 4 Pacific, exclusively on Pay-Per-View TV. It's going to be a night unlike...
Ladies and gentlemen, here they are! They're the...
What this network needs, this network gets. I promise you that.
The opinions you love the history you crave. This is Rant FM Radio.
The recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
The Shining Wizards Network proudly presents
the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast
with your hosts,
the Impact Playa, Phil Rea, and Dave Mega Powers.
Welcome to your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. From the current to the way back, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. As always, Wednesday evening, we are chilling. Your gracious host here, the Impact Player, Mr. Phil Rea, and I am joined by...
the Mega Powers.
You all right there?
Yeah, you know, literally, as soon as you said that, I had to have some sort of liquid stuck in my throat. I know that sounds horrible.
It does.
And it is, but it was standard government-regulated saliva in my mouth.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first. We're live on Rant EM Radio, Rant Entertainment Media. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, as always. And, we are smack dab in the middle of WrestleMania season. How are you, sir?
I'm doing good, but you know what? It kind of doesn't feel like WrestleMania season.
You know what? It doesn't feel like it yet. Give me another week. We're actually, I think, 20 days away now. Well,
yeah.
Yeah, about that, right? 19
it's
days.
I already watched, you know, I watched WrestleMania 11 for this. I watched WrestleMania 8 last week. And I'm still not catching the fever.
I don't know, Mega Powers. Maybe as we get a little closer and the Rant and all the other shows that we're a part of and support, maybe if they get into the spirit too, and we'll and then of course the spread that we'll have that day and the friends that we'll be hanging out with. So we're gonna have a good time.
You know, maybe I need to listen to WrestleMania the album. Maybe I need to play WrestleMania the Nintendo game, or maybe if I really want to amp it up, Super WrestleMania, and see what happens.
Well, either way, it doesn't feel like it yet, but I think once we start this train going a little faster and the days progress, I think we'll be a little better off for it. Mm. Tank's in the chat room. Hello, Tank. well, before we get into anything, I just want to give a special shout out to our boy Matt E. Legend. You guys know him better as Matt E. Legend in the chat room. Matt, I spoke to Matt earlier today, and he had a very successful medical procedure, pretty intense, but less invasive. So he was well enough to even send me a message and say, "Hey, I'm okay. Thanks for the shout out."
That's great.
And he looks good. He feels good. He said he's really happy about the sponge baths he's been getting. So shout out.
Yeah, because he's got all these hot Asian women who are living in Vancouver or whatever, you know,
right,
working in the hospital and living all over the place. It sounds like I told him I think I have to move there.
Right. So this is like a Friday night for Dave, but now. Matt gets experience in the hospital.
He gets it every day.
Yeah, good.
You know,
for him.
Now I just need my small intestine taken out as well.
There you go. Big Tone in the chat room. Hello, Big Tone. Thanks for hanging out with us tonight. Big Tone's normally a regular now on the Wrestling Call and Show on Saturday evenings with Mr. Will I Am Morgan. All right. So I got some news items. No Facebook questions this week. Good job, guys. And then we'll have we have a kick-ass throwback for you, kicking it all the way back to 1995. Figured open up with some White Zombie, which was hot 1995, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
So I figured...
I remember wearing White Zombie shirts around that time, and everybody thought I worshipped Satan.
I saw them at the Roseland, like right before 95, the end of 94. I saw them at the Roseland. They were a great live band.
Oh, man.
So, good.
If only, like, his solo stuff lived up to
how
great White Zombie was.
You know what? It's funny you say that, because he opened for Ozzy back in, like, I think it was 08, I think it was. I saw Ozzy twice that year on tour. Was it 07, 08? Yeah, 08. And he had his solo, it wasn't terrible. You know what I'm saying? So I guess to each his own.
When the solo stuff first came out, it was pretty good. But then, like, as it dragged on.
Well, I mean, it's kind of like it's not really innovative. It's the same shit. It's the same riffs. But I mean, it's just, you know. But either way, Rob Zombie does a really good stage show. He had Naked Chicks in Cages, so that really helped.
There you go.
So, all right. So I got some news. I got some stuff I want to get into. Dave's gonna break down the New Japan Cup tournament so far, what's been going on with that, and who still holds the cards in the contest.
Yes.
And then we'll take a quick break. We'll have a little nice throwback for you. Everyone I enjoy going back and looking at. I think that's part of the fun is when we do these shows, we get to go back and like reminisce, and then Dave and I will. We always miss something. Like I missed a bunch of shit. Like going back to this, I totally didn't. And then the best part of it is you always learn something. Like I didn't know about certain things, and I'll get into that in a little while.
Yeah.
And
it's like a different time now compared to then. So
totally.
Looking back on, you know, from when I was a kid, is totally different than it is now.
Yeah.
Obviously, you know, we'll talk about it when it's time.
Yeah, of course.
We'll leave it for then. Yeah. You know, no use in spoiling the surprise.
No, we'll throw a couple teasers out there to our peeps listening. Okay, yeah, and I just want to give a shout out to everybody who I didn't thank last week for reaching out to me. I really appreciate it. Feeling a lot better. Family's getting back into the swing of things. And I got an abundance of emails, text messages, fans of other shows that talked about it on their show. They reached out to me, and I just want to thank each and every one of you for reaching out. I really, really appreciate it. And it's nice to feel that love from you guys. So thank you so much for reaching out in my time of need. I truly appreciate you guys. Even though I don't know any of you personally, I feel a lot closer to most of you. So thank you so much for that.
You are loved, Phil.
Apparently I am, dude, and it's real apparent. So thank you so much for that. All right. Let's get into some news. And I have a rebuttal. Not a rebuttal, but I have a philatorial, a quick one, actually, which will coincide with the with the news. So yeah. Tommy Dreamer ran a House of Hardcore show over the weekend in Philly. Midnight Jury Cats were in attendance. Apparently, from what I read, the show was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
From what I read, it was a packed house. From also what I read, I know our boy JP was there. The Midnight Jury guys were there. A bunch of people that we know were there, and it was nothing short of good. Tommy Dreamer always puts on a good show with those guys. And so apparently, Rey Mysterio shows up.
Wow.
Not under contract anymore with the E, obviously. We spoke about that last week briefly. Came in and made the save and gave the 619 to EC3 and Eric Young. And cut a bit of a promo. I don't have the promo. I didn't watch the event yet, which will lead me to my philatorial. Hey, Mr. X. Mr. X is in the chat room. Hello, sir. So, I'm happy for Ray. I'm hearing he's doing Lucha Underground too, apparently. So good for him. But then, right after the fucking event, Dave, right after the event, I read a Tommy Dreamer thread. And here comes my philatorial. So Tommy Dreamer hired a third-party company, apparently. I don't know how true this is, but he hired a third-party company to seek out people who stream his iPay-per-view illegally. Now, again, I'm the first to admit it. I robbed cable years ago with the hot boxes. You know, every month we got the for 3 or 4 year stretch, I got another free stuff because I had bought a hot box. I paid for the cable service, but I stole cable, and that's what a lot of us wrestling fans did, because it started getting to the point where they'd be, you know, the pay per views were $15 and $19. Now they were $20 and $25, and now with an HD feed, you could pay up to $60 and $70. So as pay-per-view got bigger, as the events got bigger, as the production got better, you paid more in price. So these indies, in the last half a decade, started doing the iPay-per-views. Tommy Dreamer goes and hires a third party to seek out people who, whatever, did this whole streaming. Most of it's coming from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's easier to track an IP address from this country to see who's actually streaming it and serving it than it is to, you know, to do it from somewhere else. But apparently it's not illegal in other places. So that's his beef.
Now, so outside of the U.S., it's perfectly legal.
Like, if one of our friends in the U.K., like, so let's say Harry and I have been talking a lot about soccer. So if I didn't get a Chelsea game on my TV and Harry had it to me, he can. Because it's not illegal there. Okay? As I swig my water, I'm sorry. So,
it's okay.
So anyway, now, here's my beef. Okay? This guy sold 60,000 iPay-per-views in this last event.
What?
60,000.
Sold.
Sold.
How much was it again?
I don't even know, dude. I know most of them are like $15. And they're $25 if you buy that with the DVD, like we used to do with the Extreme Rising and the Chikara and all that shit. And
yeah.
Beyond Wrestling, if you buy, like, if you pay $20 or $25, you'll get the VOD, video on demand, for like whatever it is, and then you get a DVD later on. That's what I did with King of Trios 2 years ago for Mikey. I got all three nights on DVD, and I ordered the iPay-per-view. If anybody has had iPay-per-view, has ordered it, and Shining Wizards Matt is one of my main supporters on this, because him and I bought a shit ton of them in the last couple of years. Okay?
Yeah.
They're terrible. And even Ring of Honor no longer does it.
They're bad.
They're bad.
They've been bad since the beginning.
The problem is, Dave, the technology is just not there. It doesn't matter how great your cameras are. It doesn't matter how great your fucking screen looks. It doesn't matter. If the server that's projecting these iPay-per-views is not coming into your computer properly and there's an abundance of people watching it, you're going to have it crash and freeze up. Mm-hmm. And that every single time. I bought Final Battle last year. Jay Briscoe wins the belt, right?
Yeah.
You know I lost that match? The pay-per-view, iPay-per-view went totally great until right after the bell. So I missed the fucking main event. I bought the DVD so I can have it. Okay? So thank God I bought the package deal. Because if I couldn't get a torrent, then I would be at a shit's luck. I could have bought the replay and stream it from the site, but again, it's not good technology. I could see if he didn't sell any and made a beef about it, but you sold 60,000 fucking units, dude. That's a lot for an iPay-per-view. You know why? Because you're Tommy Dreamer. You're a name in this business. You're one of the most well-respected guys. I love Tommy Dreamer. Tommy Dreamer's been nothing but cool to me every time I had an interaction with him.
The shows are great, even though I haven't seen any of the House of Hardcore shows.
Dude, Mike Norenganga from the Midnight Jury was talking about it the other night on Facebook. I mean, again, JP was there. His first time in Philly. Shout out to JP and the Nerdport kids. This was his first time there. They had a blast. And you know why? Because Tommy Dreamer just takes pages from Paul E.
Yeah.
And books good cards. Now, the arena doesn't look like the ECW arena anymore, obviously.
No.
So there's a bit of a magic there. There's a bit of a mystique still there, even though they renovated the joint.
It's still the same place.
There's a lot of magic. There's a lot of memories in that place. And I was there from like 95 to 99 almost every other month. Okay. So I don't know the problem with Tommy Dream about streaming. Because, listen, I understand you're losing money, but it's not coming from here, dude. So this is pretty much Tommy Dreamer versus Europe. Or yes. Tommy Dreamer versus Asia. Or Tommy Dreamer versus...
Yeah, I'm sure Indonesia or Africa or something.
Right.
Just so, people all over the world who are privy to what's going on here.
Right.
No matter how small it is.
Right. And this is an indie fed. This is a local indie fed that runs shows out of Philadelphia and Westchester.
And he doesn't do shows
anywhere
else. It's not even once a month. It's like
every 6 months, every 3 months, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think he runs like maybe 3 or 4 shows a year.
Yeah.
That's fine. And he gets
What was it on? I think it was on JR's podcast or Austin's or something. He talked about how he basically puts in whatever money that he makes from the previous show into the next show. And he stated if he doesn't break even, he's not going to do another show. Well, so far he's doing pretty good.
Break even, he made almost $500,000.
Yeah.
Now listen, I understand he's got a working agreement with TNA. So he had all this talent. Guys like Eric Young, Bobby Roode, you know.
Were the Wolves there?
I believe so. I don't know the whole card. Honestly, I didn't even look. But he had a working agreement. So I know Eric Young was there because him and EC3, they turned on Dreamer. Somebody turned on Dreamer and Ray made the save. And then Ray did a whole speech. So Tommy, do me a favor, man. Just be thankful that you're still relevant. Be thankful that you can have this effect on, like, fans. Like, you know, thank you for giving us an alternative. And
be thankful that anybody paid for it.
And gave a shit. And gave a shit.
$60,000. I was not expecting that.
Like, do you think Chikara makes that? They do. They probably do now. But it didn't take. They didn't make that off the bat. Those eye pay per views are terrible. Not the people themselves, but the companies and the technology is just not there. It's not there, dude.
Yeah.
It's not. I'd rather just wait for the replay, or I'd rather wait for a DVD or a Blu-ray or a digital download, because I can't be fucking bothered with the nonsense.
Mm.
I can't. I just can't. And I was waiting for it, and when I read that, and then, again, I don't know how true this is, but this is just what more than one wrestling site and the dirt sheet sites had this article, so it wasn't like a thing where I just made it up and like, okay, well, if this is true, and he sold whatever it was, 60,000 hits, then that's a lot of money.
It is a... quite a nice chunk of change.
And it does, Dave, this stuff's not cheap, man. The iPay-per-view technology's not cheap. I know for a fact the PWS guys pay a lot of money for their iPay-per-view thing, and it still sucks. No, not PWS, but the technology, okay?
Yeah.
I know that's cost a lot of money. So I guarantee you a lot of that money he's making is going into him paying the talent and then him paying into iPay-per-view and production. I think Rob Feinstein puts out his videos.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I have to you chat
for PWS. I think so, because
PWS
I always see
and,
the,
and House
always
of
see
Hardcore and House of Hardcore. Yeah. So now, of course, now Rob gets a cut of that. So like, you know, it's not like these guys are making a shit ton of money. You know what I'm saying? These guys are doing it because they love it and they're still relevant. You know.
So at the end of the day, you got to pay everybody else before you pay yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, again, I didn't want to shit on Tommy Dreamer. I love Tommy Dreamer. I've been a fan of Tommy Dreamer from Jump Street. I don't have nothing but nice things to say about Tommy Dreamer. But if that's true, and you're pissing him on about streaming, and you got 60,000 hits, you need to chickity check yourself before you wreck yourself, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. Let's see here.
That's pretty cool. I've been meaning to check out one of those shows. I'll probably be... this month, I know I'm going to be hitting some shows on the 14th. What day is that? That's going to be
Matter of fact, I'm alone this weekend, so I may catch a show. Where are you going on the 14th?
Jersey Championship Wrestling.
Now, where is that going to be?
Howell, New Jersey.
Well, I wonder how far, because I just found out that I'm pretty much going to be available Saturday night into Sunday.
Okay.
So maybe I'll
if you want to come with, let me know, because a friend of mine's doing commentary for them. Jocka's on the card, I believe.
It's always nice to see Jocka, man. All right.
So it might be a good night. You know, I'm planning on heading out, and then following Saturday, 21st, the number one wrestling promotion out of Rahway returns. Jersey All Pro.
No, that's Mom Dukes' birthday party. I can't skip that, or else she'll suplex me for real.
It's going to be a good night, Saturday night, and next Saturday.
I'm just glad that the indies are still out there. And guys, wherever you are in this great country, go support local indies, man. Go support your local indies. I know, shout out to Chris from Maryland, Chris German. He goes to his Maryland.
Chris who?
Chris German. Yeah, it's Chris German.
Is
buddy
that
from
Nick
Maryland.
German?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. I'm sorry. Yeah, Nick. You know what? I have a friend named Chris German I play roller hockey with back in the day, and I was messaging him the other day, and I have Chris in my mind. So, Chris, I'm...
So now Nick is going to be on your ass.
Yeah, so now Nick... Now I just gave Nick and Chris, who have... It's spelled the same way, pronounced the same way, and I was talking to him.
Wait, N-I-C-K is not how you pronounce it?
No, the last name, Dickface, not the first name. It's pronounced in... Yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter.
I was speaking of spelling errors. I was at the Underground Strength Gym over in Edison.
That's
Hang and Bang.
That's close to me.
Best of them. Where I did the Warrior show.
Yep.
And the shirt that my friend Zach, who runs the gym, gave to me, pointed this out to me 3 years later. That on the back of the shirt, it does not say stronger than yesterday. It says stonger than yesterday.
Nice.
And he took a marker and he put the letter R on my shirt.
That's dope.
Because he had a bunch of misprints and... didn't realize that the batch that he gave out to the Warrior University graduates had an error on it. And that reminds me, we're going to have Zach on the show on April 1st, the anniversary of Warrior winning his first world championship.
April 1st is a Wednesday?
It is.
Awesome sauce. All right, so look out
for
that.
He will be calling into the show.
So anyway, Nick German and our buddy Lee go to Maryland Championship Wrestling. I know that. And again, just support your local indies. Big Tone saying CZW. But again, go support.
Wait, CZW West Side? They're on the East Coast, East Side.
Maybe they do a West Coasting. I don't know. I have no idea. But anyway, go support.
Do the East Coast.
They only do the East Coast. Okay, so support your local indies, man. Big Tone's in Cali, so he can go PWG. NWA Hollywood, there's a bunch of indie promotions. Go support
them. It's not NWA Hollywood. It's just Championship Wrestling from Hollywood.
Oh, they broke away from the NWA?
Oh, yeah, for years now.
I stand corrected then. Whatever. You know what? It still comes up as NWA on my DVR. So I guess Fios didn't pick that up. Okay. Let's get into some other news here. Now, here's something that pissed me off, and they brought up on a rant last night. The WWE wants to, what do you call it? They want to patent the two sweet symbol that the NWA used to use, that the Bullet Club is currently using. And primarily they want to do it because the Bullet Club is using it.
Which I don't understand, because it's not like they're putting the two sweet symbol on t-shirts, right? Well,
they did. They do. They say they.
It
say,
is on ProWrestlingTees.com.
Well, that, and so is our t-shirts, by the way. ProWrestlingTees.com/turnbuckle throwbacks. We have four different designs, guys. Go get some.
And while you're at it, you can go to turnbucklethrowbacks.com.
That's right. For
check out previous shows. Follow us on Twitter at @TBuckleTBacks.
Look at you.
You know, I realize we don't plug everything.
Well, we do at the end, but
we need to do it more often.
I'm glad
that'd be like a radio station. You're listening to WRANT.
That's funny. It's funny that you say that, Dave, because apparently the rant is doing a co-host swap in the upcoming months.
Oh,
and,
good.
And you, my friend, are going to be hosting a night of Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
I am,
and I will be the co-host. So now that you've got the plugs out of the way, you should get into that more often and practice my shtick.
All right.
All right, playa? All right.
Okay.
I'm having separation anxiety just thinking about it, but let's see how you do.
Anyway,
Anyway.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I know you can. Getting back to the Bullet Club. So now they do the too sweet. They also, you know,
do the suck it.
And they do the suck it. And it bothers the shit out of me. Even Kevin Nash endorsed them at one point in an interview saying that he thinks it's awesome. He thinks it's very flattering that they do
it. Dude, it keeps them relevant.
Right.
After all these years.
So they want to fucking patent it? Why? Because these guys are over? Let them pay homage to the other guys.
And how many people, you know, was it right now? I don't know what the standing is for New Japan World right now, but they only have like 20,000 people from last I checked that are on the server. You know, people are buying the t-shirts and stuff like that. But, you know, hey, these guys got to hustle. You know, they got to sell their merchandise. They got to sell their wares because, you know, I'm sure even though these guys are traveling all around the world doing pro wrestling, living the dream, it's not always a dream. They have kids. They have wives. They got houses probably that they, you know, got to pay the bills.
Hold the phone. Axel Foley's in the room? Where the hell have you been? And Scott! I'm sorry, Dave. Carry on.
Okay. Now that you plugged the people in the chat room.
No, I'm you're giving me, you know, you're giving me your rebuttal, and I'm looking at the chat room, and also they pop in at the same time.
They're coming in. They're flocking in.
That's right. They know the deal. It's Wednesday night, bitches. Carry on. Yes. They have families.
And we got to give credit where credit's due for the people that show up every week in the chat room to listen to us.
That's why I like to shout them out, because we have a lot of loyal listeners that, you know, I just found out in this last week, bro, that we have a ton of listeners that don't, you know, listen to the show live because they have lives. But
yeah.
I can't begin to tell you. I had a female reach out to me the other day and said I'm a big fan of the show. And I mean, we get a lot of feedback, so this is great. So anyway,
we're gonna have some rats coming up soon, right?
You are. You, that's all you, brother. That's all you. All right. Anyway. So carry on.
So yeah, you know, these guys got lives. You know, I'm pretty sure whatever they're getting paid for, you know, it's going to their families, going to travel, it's going to hotels, it's going to everything. These guys are, you know, the epitome of independent contractors. Doesn't matter if they got a guaranteed contract with New Japan or whatever the deal is. You know, money goes by fast. And, you know, I was talking to Zach at the gym before I was leaving, telling him I've been hustling like crazy on eBay. You know, if you want to buy some Chikara DVDs from me, check out X Sticky Fingers X on eBay. And maybe you can purchase the I didn't even know I fucking had it until this week. But because it's been years since I watched it. But I have a DVD of Chikara. Name of the event is called From Hero to Castagnoli. And who's on the undercard as a schlub that nobody knows that's wrestling in front of less than 30 people? The Rainmaker himself, Kazuchika Okada, is wrestling at Chikara as a nobody. And this was like 2006. So that was like 9 years ago when he was just a student under Ultimo Dragon and Toriumon in Mexico. And it's like, whoa, who the hell would have thought that the one of the faces of New Japan wrestled in Chikara in front of like less than 30 people? And I have that DVD up for sale for $15. Or if you want to buy it now for $20 up on eBay under X Sticky Fingers X, check it out. So anyway, everybody's on the hustle. I don't understand from WWE's point of view why they would want to, you know, copyright the hand sign. I can understand for certain guys. I know DDP has the diamond cutter symbol is copyrighted. I believe he actually successfully sued Jay-Z for doing a similar hand symbol.
It's The Rock, and it's really not. But anyway. But
still, he got him.
Yeah, he got him.
I think they settled out of court, or he won the case, one or the other.
Yeah, whatever.
I can understand if it's individual, but it's like this is a company. They're not really going to be making big bucks.
Nobody's making money off of it. Nobody's making what? Because they sell a couple of T-shirts. It's ridiculous. And you know what? Listen, I know ring announcers, guys like Michael Buffer, like he trademarked, "Let's get ready to rumble." I know the ring announcer from UFC. He says his shtick, and they have it copyrighted. But come on, man. This is something.
Or the guy from Heroes of Wrestling with the "Let's kick some ass" or something, or everybody's gonna get their ass kicked. Has that copyrighted?
Right. He might. Yeah. Mr. X is saying that he won out of court. They settled. Right, because he can't hold the candle to what Jay-Z has in money. So I'm sure Jay drew a couple bucks.
The DDP yoga, I'm sure, is raking in the bucks.
Yeah, it's raking in the bucks. But Jay's like a billionaire, dude. That's,
you know,
that's
what was it? I was actually telling somebody at work about DDP yoga because they're like, "Oh, my back's hurting and all that." Like, you got to get on DDP yoga. And they're like, "Oh, that sounds familiar." So I had to break it down for them. And they're like, "Oh, I think I might have to get that." It works. I've been doing it for almost 3 years now. I love it.
Yeah. No, it's good. My wife does it all the time. So anyway, so that kind of pissed me off. I mean, I was telling AA this last night. Imitation is the best form of flattery.
Yeah.
You know, like, why would you – I've been doing that hand gesture since before the NWO. We played softball.
I'll say this. Sorry to cut you off, Phil.
No, go ahead.
But because of the Bullet Club doing it, I wanted to do it. And then when I would hang out with random people who, like, they're not big wrestling fans, but they remember it, I would start doing it with them. And they were like, "Oh, NWO. And, you know, we would do Too Sweet and all that. They're not too privy to the Bullet Club or Japanese wrestling. So, but they remember the NWO. So when I do it, they think about the NWO. And as a result, you know, when WWE Shop had one of their sales, I ended up buying an NWO shirt because I was doing it so often.
Yeah, everybody had an NWO shirt. It was the shit.
Yeah, man. And I never bought one. I wanted to buy one when I was a kid. But Tank saying I'm getting limber with DDP yoga for the Asian women. You better believe it.
I bought it. Well, listen, before I became an EMT, I worked in a factory, in a warehouse, for a tuxedo company. And my friend Chris German, not Nick German, and a bunch of us, all the older guys, you all bought the Wolfpack T-shirts.
Yeah.
And I bought one because we had like a Wolfpack T-shirt day. I hated the Wolfpack, but my boys were into it. We all did the Too Sweet. And we all did it. It was like a morale thing at work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, you know what? This is getting – that's just petty, man. It's just petty.
Yeah, it's stupid literally for me, of all people who doesn't really like buying stuff, I bought a fucking NWO shirt that I didn't buy when I was a kid recently. I think I bought it like sometime last year because of the Bullet Club, and they were doing the Too Sweet shit, and then I was doing it with people, and I was like, "Oh, let me buy the NWO shirt as like a gag." Plus, I know I'm going to wear it out in public because when people see me wear the wrestling shirts, like whether they're a huge fan or not, they're like, "Oh, I remember them." And then that starts a conversation with people. It brings out good, you know, emotions from people, you know, brings out, you know, nostalgia. And you know what? It's just turning up for random sales for WWE. You know, they're not, you know, I know that they've been pushing the whole Monday Night War stuff and like all that, but you don't have too many people talking about that stuff. You don't have too many people talking about NWO or whatnot. But when the Bullet Club does it, it makes you think like, "Oh, you know, I remember the NWO. Maybe I should check out that random pay-per-view from 96 WCW to relive some of the NWO stuff or to see how bad it was."
Right.
You know, it works both ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So it pissed me off when I read that. And I was like, I got to, you know, and then somebody asked us on a Facebook page. Nick asked us, actually. He asked us our opinion. I'm like, "Well, we'll give it tonight because I have it on my list." So,
for the record.
Right. So, all right. Do you have any other news before we take a break and get into our throwback?
Let's get into the New Japan tournament.
Okay, let's get into it. What do you got?
So the 15th, which is a Sunday in Japan, but for us it's going to be
Saturday into Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be Saturday into Sunday. I think like around like 4:30 a.m., 5:30 a.m., sometime around then. Into Sunday morning is when the show's going down. Down to the final four. And for the contest right now, we have our boy Danny Kutcher from Get in the Ring.
Happy
who's
birthday.
Got Goto.
Birthday, by the way. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday. Who is going against Uptown Georgie, who has Makabe.
Uh-huh.
Togi Makabe, who you know, is a favorite to win this tournament. But either way, any four, like literally any four of these guys could win, and it would work. Literally right now, I hear a lot of people saying Makabe, but I hear a lot of people saying Ibushi. I hear a lot of people saying Goto. I'm pushing for Naito.
I'm pushing for Naito too, but I think Ibushi's going to take it. I think they give him.
There you go. I love the fact that nobody can put their finger on who the winner is.
So this is going to be the final. They're going to do the two matches.
It's going to be Goto versus Makabe, and the other semifinal match is going to be our buddy Pete Sanzone, who has Naito, going against another fan of ours, Kevin David, who has Kota Ibushi.
Right.
And that's the final four. Actually,
no, they're not. But
I didn't. I didn't do. I've been all over the place, but I saw the lineup for the show. Let me track it down. You can talk while I'm.
But are they doing the semifinals and the final match that night, or are they just doing the semifinals?
Yes, they are.
Oh, all right. So you're gonna get a whole card, a semifinal between the four guys, and then the final.
Yeah.
Oh, that's perfect. All right, hopefully.
So it's probably going to be, you know, 10 or so matches. You know, I love how they, you know, I've always been a big fan of just the one-night tournament. But I can understand on their part, because especially since a lot of these shows, you know, they run on tours. So, like, when they do New Japan Cup, it's the New Japan Cup, you know, tour. So they're going to milk the shit out of the tournament, you know, as much as they can until the finals. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Okay.
I'm going to try to get the full card. You know, we could talk about some other stuff.
Yeah. Dave's getting the full card. So that's going to be Saturday into Sunday morning. I'm actually going to be home here by the lonesome. If I don't sleep through it, maybe I'll get up and try to watch it. I can't guarantee it, though. It's just that I'm old, and B, there's too much shit going on during the day for me to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning for a Japanese wrestling match. But it'll be on, if you have New Japan
it's
World,
on the playback.
On the playback, for sure. And I've been watching a lot of the old stuff, because I've been getting prepped for Scott Charles, Bam Bam Bigelow for tonight's throwback, which he's one of my top five favorite wrestlers of all time. So, you know what? It's and then I heard Vader on, speaking of big men, I heard Vader on Colt Cabana's podcast, and on a side note. And I loved the big men like that. And they were a team, too. And Dave and I spoke about that recently in last year. But, I mean, just, guys, get, seriously, it's $2 a week. You can't go wrong. It's fantastic. They do a really good job. And if you have Google Chrome, every computer should have Google Chrome at this point in the game. It'll automatically translate it for you. There's nothing bad on this thing. It comes correct all the time. And like Dave mentioned, it's all the live stuff. You get it live that right when it happens, and you watch it on a replay right away. So with that being said, do you have the rest of the card?
No, I have not found it.
Dave has not found the rest of the card. So, but yeah, get New Japan World if you're into the strong style. Just for the old shit. Like, just get for the old stuff is just fantastic.
Dear Lord, there was so much good stuff on there.
All right, we'll get,
you know, I know a lot of people.
Hold on one second.
Like, yeah.
All right. Turnbuckle Throwbacks. Hello, Turnbuckle Throwbacks.
What's up, Big Papa?
What's going on? What are you calling in to gloat about your final four?
Oh, Togi Makabe kicking ass and taking names, baby. I wanted to say.
What's going on, kid?
Chilling, man. And yo, by the way, it is worth it. I hear you talking about the New Japan. The world thing, it's definitely worth it. I've been following the tournament and just gloating about it right now, fellas.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. If you, and again, it translated. You know, you don't have to speak Japanese to follow it.
Yep.
It's just so good. And there's like random shit on there. Like I found there was some sort of like weird tournament. I think it was for one of the Tokyo Dome shows, and it was like you know, just like a semifinal and a final. But one of the matches was like Sting against like some random kickboxer.
I caught that. Yes.
Like, what the fuck is that all about? There's even like an MMA battle royal.
Yeah.
Like that should not exist, but it existed.
So George, are you pretty confident Makabe is going to take this whole thing?
Dude, I'm gloating about it. I can't wait to claim my prize. I'm about to hook up with you wherever you at just to claim my prize, for real.
Absolutely. We'll save on postage.
Yeah, man.
Exactly. When I heard you say that, I said, no doubt. I'll meet you up wherever you at, Big Papa.
You ain't lying. All right, man. All right, let me let you go. Let's finish this up and get into the throwback. But thanks for calling in, kid.
No problem, brother. Take care, guys.
All right, be good,
Georgie. Take care, brother.
Uptown Georgie calling in to cut a promo for Makabe.
He's already claiming, he's already got the trophy in his hand.
Claiming that trophy, son. That's what I'm talking about.
You still got two more matches to go, man.
That's right.
The
journey is not done. Do you have the rest of the card?
Yes, I found it. Let's get into it. Found it on the New Japan website.
All right. Talk to me, sweet tits. What do we got?
All right. So one of my new favorites, Jay White, is teaming up with Kushida of the Time Splitters, as well as Jushin Thunder Liger, who is the current NWA Junior Heavyweight Champion.
50 years old.
50 years young. And they are going against Mascara Dorada, as well as Ryusuke Taguchi and Tiger Mask 4 in the opening bout. Next match is another tag match because, keep in mind, again, New Japan, it's all about the tag matches until the big event. That's how, you know, as WWE would have John Cena go against Seth Rollins in a street fight every night for months. New Japan, they just have the tag matches. Like, regardless of where you are, only way you're going to see that blow-off singles match is at the big show. But next match is another tag match. One of the Young Lions, Yohei Komatsu, is teaming up with Satoshi Kojima, one of the bearers of the lariats.
Absolutely.
And they will be going against another Young Lion, Sho Tanaka, as well as the apparently ex-tag team partner of Kojima and current NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I mean, World Heavyweight Champion. No. Oh, my bad. He's not in this match. I'm getting ahead of myself. Instead, it's going to be Sho Tanaka teaming up with Mr. Blue Justice himself, Yuji Nagata.
Nice.
My bad. I know Kojima is going against Tenzan, but they're not in that match.
Guys like Tenzan, Yuji Nagata, like just ageless dudes, man. Those guys are ageless.
I don't know how these dudes fight the strong style.
And beat their bodies up like that, and they're still fighting at 40 and 50 years old. It's awesome.
Yeah, because Kobashi retired, what was it, last year? And the guy can hardly move. A lot of people comment, like, it's kind of sad looking at him because he just kind of, he's like a robot. And I remember there was, like, some wrestler who commented, I forgot who it was, but whenever they got in a headlock from Kobashi, they could hear, they were joking when they were saying this, obviously, but they were joking that they could hear the gears grinding in the guy's elbow because of how stiff and rusty the guy is from just having the shit beat out of him, you know? So anyway, next match on the card is part of the New Japan Cup semifinal, Togi Makabe, who obviously Uptown Georgie, one of our favorite listeners, he's got him going against Hirooki Goto. Danny Kutcher from Get in the Ring has him. The next match is another semifinal match. Tetsuya Naito going to get Hota Ibushi.
Naito!
That's going to be a barn burner, yeah, if you ask me.
I like Ibushi a lot. I just love Naito to death. Not because I like saying his name. I think the kid's got...
Yeah, he's spunky, you know, now... go ahead.
He's spunky. He grows on me, you know.
The kid's got...
pizzazz.
He's got some, chutzpah. My God. You know, all day at work, I say the most random shit, but when I'm on the show, now I have nothing to say.
You know what? I got my people.
He's got some zip. He's got some.
I tell everybody it's that kind of party? Everybody at work uses that. Now, I got my director of the hospital using it. He said to me the other day, he goes, how you feeling? I'm like, I'm all right, man. How are you? He goes, yeah, I'm just making sure you're all right. I'm checking in on you. I know you had some stuff going on. I'm like, yeah, I appreciate it, man. Thanks, boss. Checking in. He goes, because anything comes down, you need me, I'll be there for you. It'll be that kind of party. I was like, oh, yeah? He goes, yeah, I got that from you. I was like, yeah?
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, I say random shit at work just to get by, too. Sometimes you get nice rise out of everybody.
Yeah, plus, like, when everybody's having, like, a weird day or something, I'll just say some random shit, like, what was it? Like, stuff I even say on the show, too, like, what was it? Like, whenever I'm dealing with like difficult customer, I'll say to my supervisor, like, you know, I got this bozo I'm dealing with right now. And then everybody just starts like laughing.
Can you help me with this jock ass I'm dealing with right now?
Yeah, I got this Einstein that I'm dealing with. And it's just like, you know, like, as much as I want to curse, like, we can still curse at work. We could say whatever we want. But, you know, I know I'll get a better reaction if I say something, you know, goofy or whatever, you know?
This is Dave to his boss when he has a problem with a customer.
Are you trying to tell me my money's not good enough for you? I find that a little hard to swallow, you jock ass! Are you trying to...
You know, actually, that's the customers to me, so...
Oh, it's a customer to you, you jock ass? That's funny.
Speaking of the job, real quick, if anybody remembers, I did bitch and moan about my position at the job. Somebody else, you know, I switched to a different department, thank God, and there's somebody else doing my job, and everybody's bitching and moaning about them. So, I don't know. People at work, you know, bosses, gotta get your shit together. That position sucks.
Yeah.
Anyway. Next match, another tag match. Tomoaki Honma is teaming up with Shibata. And they are going against Bullet Club members Tama Tonga and the recently debuted Cody Hall.
Cody Hall.
And, he's still considered a young lion. I think he had his first match sometime last month in February. He's basically just kind of doing the same moveset as his father. He's more or less the fall guy in a lot of these tag matches, which is fine because he's new.
He's Lee Majors?
Yes, he is. Okay. He's a $6 million man.
Okay, carry on.
So anyway, what's it called? He's basically the guy that's getting pinned all the time, which is fine. Because, you know, just the way the Japanese, you know, structure works is you're not going to be in the dojo for a year or so and then shoot up to the top of the card. And I know a lot of people were kind of wary of Okada when that happened, but the guy has been wrestling since he was 16 years old. So he's been around the block. Because what was it? I picked up Best of Prince Devitt from IVP videos not too long ago. And dude, it wasn't that long ago. The man was... one of the young boys walking Prince Devitt, who was already IWGP Junior Heavyweight Champion, walking him to the ring. And it's like, wow, in 4 years? Because from the time that they had their match against each other for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship to whenever that match was that I watched, it was a four-year difference. And it was like, shit, you have no idea if the guy walking you to the ring, taking your coat back, is going to be the guy that's pinning your shoulders down to the mat because they're the champ and you're not going over.
That's dope.
That's just like a random, you know, thought, but still.
All right. So
Cody Hall is wrestling in New Japan. He's not just holding the coats for everybody.
Good, good, good.
But it's probably going to be a while before the guy's really getting any – any wins or anything under his belt. Well, he's because that's just how it goes.
He's going the right route, man. Japan is the way to go right now. So,
well, hey, you know, a lot of guys, you know, find a lot of these dojos and systems as, you know, really hard and unbearable because you're literally the fucking lackey for a lot of these guys. You're doing their laundry. You're carrying their bags. You're doing everything. Like, I've even heard some stories about, like, dudes, like, shining other guys' shoes. But the whole point of the process is to get you humble. Because when you are at the top, you know, you're not going to be treating people like shit. You're going to be honored that you finally got there.
All right. What's the next match, player?
Next match, another tag match. Captain New Japan with Hiroshi Tanahashi going against Sakuraba and Yano. Big beef between Yano and Tanahashi since Yano got he pinned Tanahashi, the number one seed, in 3 minutes.
Wow.
Under 3 minutes.
Under 3 minutes, right.
Pulled the hair, small package cradle, got the win. Who the hell would have thought that?
Absolutely.
Our boy Scott, you know, had a little gleam of hope. For the first round.
Yeah.
Scott had Tanahashi,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And, yeah, he had Tanahashi.
Yeah, so his ass got pinned in the first round.
Yep.
So Nick German, you know, had a little gleam of hope going into the second round. Anyway, last match before the main event. Big 8-man tag match. Yoshihashi teaming with Ishii, along with Okada and Nakamura. Chaos are going against Bullet Club with Yujiro Takahashi, Bad Luck Fale, who got the pin on Okada, as I predicted. Also teaming with Doc Gallows and the Machine Gun, Carl Anderson. And, of course, the main event is going to be the finals of the New Japan Cup. And we'll see who gets the Duke.
Team Chaos.
Is one of us going to be meeting up with Uptown Georgie, yeah. Manhattan.
Let's see.
To hand him the prize.
And, of course, Team Chaos fronted by the best hype man in pro wrestling, Gato.
Gato.
I love Gato.
You got the sound?
Which one?
The fucking reggaeton dub. You know,
oh my
sirens.
Oh, you talking about my sirens? I should have.
Yeah. Dance hall, whatever that sound is originally from. Some sort of fucking Buju Banton Elephant Man track.
Gato and Team Chaos. Turnbuckle Throwbacks will be buying a soundboard, so hopefully,
yes.
I'll have that sound on the soundboard for sure. All right, so that's your news. Let's take a quick break. We have a pretty funny throwback for you tonight, taking you back to 1995, I should say. I was about to say 2005, but no, it's not. It's 1995. NYPD Blue is in effect. A lot of fake tits and nipples in this, and some shitty wrestling, too. You got some good matches, too, so we'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we are the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and we are on Rant Entertainment Media, rantemradio.com. We are a Shining Wizards Network production, as always, and we'll be right back.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
After a hard day at the office, working up a big thirst, many professionals reach for the smooth taste of Mellow Yellow.
Woo, baby! Mellow Yellow, the taste that beats Mountain Dew.
And now, Mellow Yellow has pictures and all the facts on your favorite NWA wrestlers. Ric Flair, Sting, the Road Warriors,
and even Matt Puttyface.
Head to your favorite store and collect all 12.
Woo! Take it from Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. Make the Mellow Yellow move.
Can I get one of those woo tickets?
Excuse me?
One of those woo tickets.
It's not woo, it's woo!
Woo!
Woo! Introducing Ric Flair's new woo! Scratch-off ticket for the North Carolina Educational Lottery with a top prize of $100,000. It's enough to make anyone say, woo!
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 You know, nobody likes partying more than the rockers, but the party's over when you start smoking.
That's right, rocking and rolling, strutting and strolling doesn't include smoking. Be a survivor.
Don't smoke.
Get the
Rant Entertainment Media. That's right. Go to rantemradio.com for some fantastic programming. Every Tuesday live at 8 p.m. you have The Rant with AA and Tony C. Every Wednesday night you have the Turnbuckle Throwbacks live with Phil Rea, the Impact Player, and Dave Megapowers. Every Thursday evening you have the Rexplex at 7 p.m. and Rant and Wrestling at 9 p.m. Every Saturday evening live at 11 p.m., Mr. Will.i.am Morgan with the Wrestling Call-In Show. Every Sunday live at 5 p.m., it's the What Are You Reading comic book show with Jordan Surfer, and a weekly visit from the Lex Experience podcast. It's the hit, it's the opinions you love, the history you crave. It's Rant EM Radio. As soon as you know what our show, head on over to ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. That's right, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com for 10 awesome shows. You have the After Midnight Podcast, the Midnight Jury Podcast, Thursday Night Destruction, the Neckbreaker Podcast, the Inconclusive Breakdown Podcast, Apex Radio, part of Apex Wrestling Entertainment, the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, 2.5 Wrestlers, King of the Indies Podcast, and of course, the Shining Wizards. So what are you waiting for? ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. It's entertainment here. The following announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. Forget about that. You just brought up
Gary Hart will whip his ass.
Tony C just brought up Ike Turner. How awesome was Lawrence Fishburne in that movie?
Oh, oh yeah. Excellent.
I'm sorry to get off topic, but he was amazing.
Play that time. Role. Nah. I got San Antonio. Nah. I can have you. Nah.
Ike said he only hit her once.
He beat her with a shoe.
He
said he only smacked her once.
He smacked her once, but he hit her with everything else.
I hit him with everything but the kitchen sink now, dog. But I'm saying.
Did you see that? You see that look in his eye?
Natty is more of a man than Rage.
Ooh, wait a minute now.
Oh, yes, Wax.
Wait a second. This is the co-host of the Wrestling Colon Show. You
yes, Wax. Sir.
That was all so right. Disrespectful.
All right.
Nah, I can't have you.
That's
you,
why your girl's, about, like, you that's why your girl's about to get eliminated from the Amazing Race.
You see that? I've never questioned your manhood, Rage.
Bullshit, you didn't, Ike. Surfer.
Tony.
You never ever questioned your manhood.
No,
you did it. Yo, you always do it.
How?
The preceding announcement has been paid for by the Ike World Order. The Wrestling Call-In Show, every Saturday evening on RantEMRadio.com. Music only means one thing.
It's WrestleMania.
WrestleMania. I do a good Vince McMahon.
Now you just have to introduce Aretha Franklin and we'll put you to the real test.
Oh, dude.
You'll lose your voice for the rest of the week if you
Aretha
do that.
Franklin was definitely not singing this on this night. All right, kids, we're back. Turnbuckle Throwbacks, RantEMRadio.com. Representing the Shining Wizards Network. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, RantEMRadio.com. A lot of stuff going on. New episodes out each week from each of these guys. Programming notes. Our WrestleMania marathon coverage begins Thursday, March 26th. So from Thursday, March 26th all the way to Monday of following Mania, we're going to have shows live. Crazy. Actually, Dave and I will be on the air that WrestleMania Sunday at 2 p.m. Just confirmed at the WrestleMania party, Shining Wizards Eddie will be joining us. Should be fun. We'll have Rage in here from Freaks and Effing Geeks. Big Tank will be in the building. Chris Espo, formerly of Tattoos and Touchdowns. Should be a good time. Myself and the Mega Powers. Maybe they'll be in studio with us that day. That'd be cool.
Yes.
Yeah, guys. Tomorrow night you have the Rexplex at 7 p.m. Rant and Wrestling at 9 p.m. The Rexplex is going to be doing a live show next Thursday, March 19th at 9 p.m. So check that out. New episodes of the Inclusive Breakdown podcast are out this week. Midnight Jury. Who else? Dave Destruction. Dave Destruction is going to have Simon Diamond on.
Oh.
So be on the lookout for that. Interesting stuff, apparently. Get the Lex Experience on Friday and Wrestling Call-In Show on Saturday evening, 11 p.m. with Mr. Will.i.am Morgan. All right. So let's get into some throwback, baby.
Let's do it.
World Wrestling Federation presents from April 2nd, 1995, from the Hartford Civic Center.
Wow.
Now, before we get into our throwback, I was thrown a challenge just last night by the rant. Double A asked if I could justify why they had the pay-per-view in Hartford, Connecticut. Hartford, Connecticut. I honestly can't defend. All I know is that Stanford and Hartford are about maybe 40 minutes apart, I think, or something like that.
Dude, well, 95 was not a good year for the World Wrestling Federation.
But they had some clout, Dave. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't a thing where they didn't have to, you know. I don't know.
Because wasn't this like still like around the time where they were kind of, you know, facing bankruptcy, you know, from all the... And I think it was, you know, sparked from the... from the steroid, you know, accusations, but I know they were getting like sued like left and right, and they were facing, you know, bankruptcy. It was either 94, 95, 96, somewhere around there.
So financially, I guess it was a good move because they originated from Connecticut.
Yeah.
And Dave, you know, that's a good point too. So that's probably our defense. Finances and the steroid shit.
It's like if they were losing money at this point, and keep in mind Hogan you know, made the switch to WCW at this point. Even so, with people, you know, criticizing WCW for getting all the old WWF guys, still, they were a big draw. WCW was, like, starting to do much better than it had, like, all the previous years with simply having Hogan, you know, on the card. And he brought Macho Man, and, you know, he brought this guy, and he brought that guy.
Shining Wizards Tony in the chat room. Hello, sir. Yeah, so I guess that's the only thing I could defend is the fact that the finances and the whole thing. All right.
Yeah, it seems like Shining Wizards Tony wants us to talk about the singer of the...
Her name was Kathy Huey. Kathy Huey was a Special Olympian.
And you know what? She still did better than Rockin' Robin.
She did a lot better than Rockin' Robin.
She blew Rockin' Robin, who is... a fully functional human being. There's no Down syndrome or whatever that Kathy Huey had. Rockin' Robin had all of those things and more and still couldn't fucking sing the national anthem properly at WrestleMania 5.
I don't know, dude.
So a Special Olympian rocked America the Beautiful.
It was funny because...
as awkward as her movements were.
Yeah. I you know what? She had, like, this opera voice going on, right?
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was, I was at work watching this too, right? And I had at my cubicle, and somebody got up and said, "What the fuck is that?" And I couldn't, what am I going to do? I couldn't fucking, you know, I couldn't even answer it. I was like, all right. I was like, I'll,
you got me there.
Yeah, I'll lower it. Sorry. Yeah, so she opened the show America the Beautiful. 16,305 paid, and I can't even say beautiful Hartford, Connecticut, because Hartford is like the South Bronx of Connecticut with trees, you know. So it's a pretty shitty area, to be perfectly honest with you. The Harvard Civic Center does have some history in pro hockey. The Hartford Whalers played there for a while. It was a nice little rivalry we had in New England. And that's pretty much it. And they did, the E did have a lot of cards there. I just don't.
But did they have any big cards?
No. Probably just Saturday Night's Main Events and shit like that. Nothing like this. This was.
So maybe they had a Velocity there later on down the road.
All right. So what I didn't know was that our Special Olympian, Kathy Huey, replaced Fishbone because Fishbone was supposed to perform. I didn't know that.
What?
Yeah. Fishbone backed out. They're like, I'm not doing this shit.
Wait, what the hell? Why did Fishbone turn it down?
I don't know, dude. You know what? I know why. Because this guy was fucking hanging out. Hold on.
Hey, bro.
What?
Ace is retarded.
She ain't retarded, she's shy, you know?
I'll tell you what to do. Take her to the zoo. I hear retards like the zoo.
Hey, this bum gotta say that.
Hey, bro.
Yeah, so once Fishbone saw that guy hanging out by the arena, they were like, fuck that, I'm not gonna...
Yeah, we're not... Not having Sylvester Stallone tickets to the zoo.
Right. Anyway.
So
obviously the main event was Bam Bam Bigelow, Lawrence Taylor. We'll get into that. Nick Totoro from NYPD Blue was a guest ring announcer, and he conducted interviews. Jonathan Taylor Thomas of Home Improvement was the guest timekeeper.
Yo, everybody, like every celebrity that was on the show, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, you know, Nicholas Totoro, Pam Anderson, Jenny McCarthy, even Lawrence Taylor. They were red. No, they weren't red hot. They were white hot at this point.
Yeah, you know what?
NYPD Blue, that was like the number one like show. And Home Improvement was like the number one sitcom.
What I didn't know either was that Fox put this out as a special later on that year, as a one-hour special. You know how NBC used to replay WrestleMania?
Yeah.
Fox did it this year. And they featured the Shawn Michaels Diesel match, and the Taylor Bigelow didn't do the,
which is interesting because they didn't really do that beforehand. Like I know that's like a recent thing that they've been doing, maybe for the last several WrestleManias, but this was like this. You have no idea if you were not around for WrestleMania 11, if you were not privy to this event, it was hyped.
Yeah, I mean,
you couldn't go anywhere without hearing about this match.
I remember getting the Daily News that day, and it had a big spread on it. You know what I'm saying? Because you know, of course, Rupert Murdoch owned the newspaper too at that point. I don't know if he still does, but you know, this wasn't even on DVD till like 10 years later.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's for as shitty as it was for a time. This was hyped very, very well. So
it was how can I word it? It plus at the time, you know, keep in mind, you know, the whole wrestler versus, you know, football player, wrestler versus boxer, whatever. It's been done plenty of times before this. But at the time that it happened, it was whenever like the last one was, I don't know, maybe the last like majorly hyped wrestler versus various sport athlete. Last big hyped one had to have been Inoki versus Muhammad Ali. Wow. So that was what? I forgot what year, 74, 75, 76, 77, somewhere in the 70s. And from then until 95, that's a good 20 years. You didn't really have any major sports star at the time. Lawrence Taylor from the Giants going against Bam Bam Bigelow in a match.
So
this was like an anomaly at the time.
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor was still hot. Bam Bam Bigelow was still a legit, you know, tough guy despite being a part of fucking
the awful $1 million corporation.
Dollar corporation, one of the worst stables of all time.
We'll get into that main event, and a lot of things bother me about this card.
Yeah, but this is what was selling the card,
of course. Because
I don't know anybody that was looking forward to any of the other matches. So, maybe some people were looking forward to some of it.
I know I was looking forward to.
I know the Coliseum video version of it had Gorilla Monsoon doing commentary.
Really?
Yeah. If you get the Coliseum, I want to get a copy of that because I remember renting that from Video on the Move in Ridgewood, Queens, and I wanted to see that. But
wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of shit I didn't know about. I didn't know Fishbone was supposed to play. That would have been awesome if Fishbone would have played. They had French.
Because I only saw this on pay-per-view, so, you know, I taped it off of TV, so I wasn't thinking to rent this on video. And who the hell would have thought Gorilla Monsoon? Who's his commentating part? What, Jim Ross?
I think so, because Ross came into the company in 93. So
they probably played the WWF radio commentary.
Right. Yep.
And people who don't know what WWF radio was, that's, I guess that was the like Armed Forces.
Yep, so Armed Forces Radio simulcast to the troops.
Yeah, because they couldn't get the pay-per-view, but you know WWF would have WWF radio, so the Armed Forces could tune in to the event and listen to Gorilla Monsoon and Jim Ross do commentary.
Right. Yep, and I liked the bigger events because they had French and German commentators at ringside. I know Ray Rougeau and Brassard guy was doing the French, and the German guys, where I wrote this down.
Colonel Plink and Hitler?
Yeah, no, Gunther Zopf and Karsten Schaefer. Yeah, this is crazy shit, right? All right, so your opening match, the Allied Powers, Davey Boy Smith and the Total Package, Lex Luger, taking on the Blues Brothers. You guys know them as the Bruise Brothers from ECW or the Skull and Eightball from, Chains and whatever the fuck they were.
Chains, Skull, Eightball.
Yeah, the
Bruise Ball.
The Bruise Brothers. That's who they were in ECW.
Who the fuck were they in TNA?
Oh, they wore suits, didn't they?
Like the Harris Boys or something.
Ron and Don Harris, right. Ron and Don Harris, that's right. So you had that going on. And Uncle Zebekiah, of course, Zeb Calder, Dirty Dutch Mantel. It wasn't a bad match. I mean,
again, you know, usually tag matches are really kind of like the Kickstarter for the events. And when I was a kid watching this, I was a huge Allied Powers fan. Little did I know, you know, how bad British people were. So, you know, I was on the side of the red, white, and blue.
Right.
And I never liked the Harris Brothers in any way, shape, or form. So even then, I had a hatred for them, I would say.
I marked out for Dutch Mantel. I knew who he was.
I knew who he was. I didn't mind him, but it was the Blue Brothers that I was not too privy on. But, you know, it was a decent match. Luger uses the illegal forearm smash.
Yeah, six and a half minutes. At one point, they capitalize on the whole identical twins thing. And like Dave said, Luger comes into the match doing the forearm smash on Eli, I think it was.
He wasn't wearing the elbow pad Jack Tunney requested him to do so.
Jacob tried to throw Luger into with a powerbomb, but Luger tagged Smith, who performed a sunset flip.
He didn't even tag Davey Boy Smith. He jumped in illegally.
He jumped in illegally and got the pin, right. So they wanted.
So Davey Boy Smith showing his true colors that he needs to cheat to win because he's not good enough.
Right.
But
your next match
did help his partner to win.
It did not help his match at all. No, it didn't help his partner. This, you know, but again, your next match was for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. The Razor Ramon fighting Double J, Jeff Jarrett, champion with the roadie. And fucking Jarrett with his light up jacket. And I loved the roadie. I did. I loved Road Dogg at this point before he was the road dog.
I loved when we found out that he was the actual singer of Jeff Jarrett's hit single.
Yes, Baby Tonight.
With My Baby Tonight.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's right.
A little backstory on this match. Jeff Jarrett won the Intercontinental Championship from Razor Ramon at Royal Rumble.
That's right.
Which actually started a little streak of Ramon losing the Intercontinental title at the Royal Rumble. I think it was like for 2 years in a row. Like the following year, he lost it to Goldust.
Yep.
But still, it was just kind of like an interesting little fact that he continuously lost the Intercontinental Championship to people, specifically at the Royal Rumble.
Right. Razor Ramon having the 1-2-3 kid in his corner. I mean, Razor was the bigger guy, taking the control really early in the match. Of course, Jarrett tries to do the heel thing and leave. The Kid forces him back in. You know, Jarrett took advantage of a couple of mistakes. Like, Razor had a losing streak for a while. It pissed everybody off. Mm. He applies a sleeper hold on Razor Ramon, who then obviously powers out. Ramon throws Jarrett. And then the Kid attempted to interfere, but was kicked by Jarrett. Ramon jumped off the ropes, attacked Jarrett, but then Double J avoided the move and applied the figure four. Razor Ramon then reversed the move, which, you know, at that point I was like, man, here's a guy who's like 6'10". I don't care what you tell me. When you reverse a figure four leg lock and this guy is 6'10", and he's all legs, he's got you stretched out like that, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, it's got to. Well, first of all, reversing the figure four doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work. But it's yeah, it's got to hurt though. It's got. I mean, because he was.
Oh, it does.
Because Scott Hall's all legs, you know.
I've given the figure four to people, and I've had them cry, legit tears out of grown men. Well, one of them was a grown man. The other one was a kid because I was a kid when I did this stuff. But it fucking hurts, and I'm sure if. Even if it's reversed, it's still going to hurt.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But I think the person who came up with the idea for the reverse figure four, I think it was Jim Barnett.
Yeah, we got to reference that.
I got to look into that because I heard it recently.
Right.
Flair, I think it was Flair who actually gave up the information somewhere.
It might be Flair's book. I think it was in Flair's book. I have to get that back out of authority.
It's like one of those like old timey, you know, territory promoters, Jim Barnett, or no. I think it was actually George Scott, because I know somebody that was affiliated with the WWF. I'm pretty sure it was George Scott who said just flip him over.
Right. So he reverses it, and then he threw Jarrett onto the mat with a suplex from the second rope, and he went to do to raise his edge. Of course, now the roadie comes in and attack, and the ring and attacks Razor Ramon, prompting the ref to disqualify Double J because the titles obviously do not change hands on disqualification.
Which is fucking cheap since it's WrestleMania.
Yeah, I don't like the cheap finishes during the big cards. I've told you that a million times.
Go ahead.
I told you that a million times. I hated the cheap finish on a bigger pay per views.
Yeah, it was really, really cheap. And but Double J, you know, retains his championship, albeit the cheap way. And he goes home with his light jacket, and as the Shining Wizards brought up in their interview with Jeff Jarrett, he is the first to be wearing the light jackets with the lights on it and shit.
Well, what about Ensemble? The 1-2-3 Kid was wearing his fucking Chinese store fucking Komodo Dragon pajamas.
His fucking Big Trouble in Little China outfit.
Yeah, you can get those with the jelly shoes. Those fucking the kids used to wear back in the '80s. The Chinese slippers. So yeah. So I, you know. So now here's something about the next match. Well, before I get into that, I know the match. The IC match went 13 minutes and 32 seconds. Your next match, Undertaker versus King Kong Bundy. Now, here's something I did not know, and it coincides with something I've been doing. As one of my de-stressors lately in the last couple of months, I've been playing Strat-O-Matic Baseball. I'm not going to explain the game, but the game it involves older baseball teams that I've been getting. I buy them from like eBay or whatever. And the one team I was trying to get was the 1994 Montreal Expos. Why does this have to do with wrestling? Well, that year, Major League Baseball went on strike, which ended around the time of WrestleMania, but that Expos team was good. They were, like, scary good, but because of the strike, they could not finish the season.
Yeah.
You know?
That was a big deal. Even WWF had the commercials with Macho Man and, like, a little kid on the baseball field saying, "We're never on strike."
This is what I'm getting at. I didn't know that they used Major League umpire Larry Young as the special guest referee for this. They written into the storyline that he was out of work because of the strike. And there was a legit lockout of the umpires, too, because of the Players Association. So I didn't – this was I went back and read this. I'm like, this is fantastic. And I literally, dude, as I was reading it, I was getting emails about buying the fucking – I was trying to buy the set, but it was too expensive. I wanted to get the 94 Stratomatic sets so I could replay some of those games, you know, with the dice and the cards and whatnot. I couldn't get it, but this really it was ironic how we're doing this episode with this particular throwback, and I was like, oh, this is fantastic. So your next match with special guest referee Larry Young, Major League umpire, King Kong Bundy versus The Undertaker. Now, I did not like this at all, and I love King Kong Bundy. This was just – Bundy just didn't seem right at this point. He didn't look relevant.
Dude, this whole period of time in wrestling was just specifically awkward. For WWF, was just weird.
Yeah, the match went 6.5 minutes. Undertaker now is a couple of years into his streak, right? So, of course, DiBiase's at ringside with his terrible corporation. We'll get into that in a little while. That team was just awful that he had. But he's at ringside with the urn and all the nonsense. You know, you want to get into the match? I
don't know. There's just, like, not much. Like, literally, there's not much to say about the match. It really is shitty. It's like, you know, even as a kid, you know, I believe Undertaker was dead. He was the Phenom, all this other kind of shit. And but you just knew he wasn't going to get him up in the Tombstone. And that's what I wanted to see. I wanted to see King Kong Bundy in the Tombstone, driven to his death in the middle of the ring. And again, you know, even as a kid, like, I did not believe in the $1 million corporation as, like, a legit, like, heel stable. Like, all those guys, like, lost their matches, and if they won, it was like squash matches. There were no real, like, threat. So I had no concern of The Undertaker defeating King Kong Bundy. And, you know, they stole the urn. Well, one thing that is kind of funny that I like to bring up is that DiBiase drops the urn. It's not on screen, but you can catch like a little glimpse of him dropping it. And the commentating team brought it up, which is stupid because why would you want to bring up him dropping the urn? And, you know, if he's dropping the urn, then the lid is coming off and all this other shit. And if we learned anything from Royal Rumble 94 is that a big ass light is going to be coming out there, or Hulk Hogan's going to take the ashes and throw it in somebody's face or something like that, you know. But I don't know. It was just kind of like a comedy of errors, this match, in my opinion.
Yeah. So,
and them stealing the urn and Kama saying that he was going to melt it down, put it into a chain, which he did.
He stole the urn. Bundy attacks Taker in order to let Kama escape backstage. Bundy picks up the Undertaker and power slams him. Then performs the Bundy Avalanche. You know, the split, the squash Undertaker, obviously. Yeah. Taker was unharmed because he's dead. However, did perform a power slam and clothesline Bundy before pinning him for the match. So that was
granted. Bundy still looked great back then. He didn't look any different than he did from WrestleMania 2.
Just didn't seem right, you know.
Yeah,
you know. And I would love to talk to King Kong Bundy, man. That's one of the guys. I loved King Kong Bundy back in the day, and that's why I love WrestleMania 2 so much, because I think
he does stand up too.
Yeah, he's a funny dude. All right, your next match: the Smoking Guns defending their tag team championship against Owen Hart and a mystery partner. Before I get into the mystery partner and the match. The Smoking Guns had epic mullets.
Yes.
Epic. For 1995, those mullets were epic. Just point that out. It's in my notes. I'm sorry.
Hey, it's pretty good.
So now Owen Hart comes out and explains to the world that he needs a partner who's great, and he has a partner who defeated his brother, Brett, which is a bonus in his book, because now he needs a partner who can equally have beaten Bret Hart, which him and this partner did, and happened to be the grand champion. But in the Japanese, it's Yokozuna.
Yes.
One of the biggest, baddest big men ever in pro wrestling. Rest in peace. Smoking Guns were a solid tag team. I did enjoy Billy and Bart Gunn. The gimmick sucked, but those guys can work their asses off.
Yeah, I don't know. When I was a kid, like, this was kind of like the beginning of me, you know, becoming more smart. I don't want to say just smart to the business because, you know, I want to throw this out there. You know, by the time WrestleMania 10 was around, which we'll be covering at the end of the month, before WrestleMania 31, they were starting to put in, you know, results for the matches in the newspaper, which was really strange. You know, the whole, you know, being smart to the business, you know, the internet was coming around. There was AOL chat rooms for WWF superstars during these events. WCW had CompuServe.
Yep.
But, you know, this is when when fans were starting to get smart to the business. And for speaking for myself as a 11-year-old at the time, I was becoming not impressed with the faces and heels that were coming out at this time. Yeah. They weren't convincing.
Yeah, the gimmick was a bit outdated, but again, all the guys in the ring can work. This was gimmicks aside, mullets aside, this was a really solid match. At one point, Owen Hart attempted to perform a dropkick from the top rope, and he hit his partner by mistake. The Guns briefly took advantage of that until Yokozuna got pissed and gave Billy Gunn his belly-to-belly suplex and then gave him the splash from the second, the bonsai drop from the second rope. Hart tagged in and wanted to do the sharpshooter, but instead just pinned Billy Gunn to win the title.
Went for the cheap pin because he knew he was already disabled. So,
all right, so your winners at 9 minutes and 42 seconds, your tag team champ, your new tag team champions with Mr. Fuji and James E. Cornette now running the helm, Owen Hart and the grand champion Yokozuna. At this point, the Guns were pretty much done at that point. They had their run for a while.
Yeah, I think they were still going strong into 96 because I remember
didn't Sonny get them for a little while, or
Sonny had them. They lost their belts, I think, to like the Body Donnas. Or no. She was with the Body Donnas, and she jumped. She was like jumping ship to like a bunch of tag teams, Smoking Guns, Road LOD 2000.
Well, no, they did win the belts back later on in the year.
Yeah.
But then they just fell apart after that. It wasn't a, you know.
Yeah, the tag scene was becoming less and less significant by time. WrestleMania 12 came around. If you remember, they actually started doing the free for all.
Yeah, yeah.
Before the event, which had matches,
and Sunday Night
Heat, that was actually the dawn of world titles.
Yeah,
being defended on a pre show,
and then MTV was doing the whole Sunday Night Heat before the pay per views too.
So, it was actually WrestleMania 12 where the first instance of a title not just being defended, but changing hands. It was the Godwins against the Body Donnas.
Yeah, skip and zip.
And it was just a shame. Yeah. It should have been on the actual WrestleMania 12 card.
I totally agree, Mega Powers. I totally agree.
Because it's a fucking title change for the World Tag Team Championship.
I hate title matches on pre-shows. We've already discussed this on numerous shows. Hate it, fucking hate it.
I'm sure there's a reason behind it, you know, maybe to get more people to watch the pre-show, and they're like, oh, they have a tag title change. Maybe I should buy the pay-per-view now. I can understand that train of thought, but I don't know. Since back then I was buying the pay-per-views, you know, just put it on there. Well, I'm still paying for the pay-per-views because I got the network, so. But I guess, you know, for those stragglers that are like, oh, I don't want to spend $9.99 a month on wrestling, even though I watch it all the time.
Right.
Because like, they got to throw some sort of incentive, you know, for people to say, like, shit, like, let me get this pay-per-view. I'm liking what I'm seeing.
So before I get into the next match, what was your opinion then and now about the that Bob Backlund character that was wrestling this night?
I actually loved it.
You like Crazy Bob Backlund?
I loved Crazy Bob Backlund because, first of all, he was crazy. Actually, initially when Bob Backlund made the heel turn, I really didn't like it because
you were a Bret Hart fan.
No. No. I hated Bret Hart.
I know.
That's but, why that's why I love Bob Backlund. Dude, I was being
I was being facetious, bro.
Yes. I know. But I hated Bob Backlund because at 11 years old, he said that he wanted to run for president and make kids go to school all year long.
Yeah.
And no summer vacation.
And that pissed
so that hit home.
That hit home because you were still going to school at that point.
Because I was still going to school and I didn't want to go all year long because I fucking hated it.
Who wanted to go to school all year long? I think one of the best things about this about Bob Backlund this night was him playing chess in the back locker room with Jonathan Taylor Thomas,
and he lost.
And then he goes on a rant about America's youth.
He's like, "Who's the Secretary of State?" And Jonathan Taylor Thomas answers.
He answered every question.
He answered every fucking question. He's like, what's the capital of Madagascar or whatever he said.
Right. And he answered it. So the next match, your fifth match on the card, was an I Quit match. Special guest referee, Rowdy Roddy Piper, Bret the Hitman Hart against Mr. Bob Backlund.
Yes.
Okay. So let's get into this a little bit. Now, in order to win the match, obviously you have to quit. You have to say I quit. Piper had the microphone. I thought the match was solid, decent chain wrestling. Bob Backlund is old at this point; he's in his
40s. Yeah, I think Bret Hart actually, for the record, said that this was like his worst WrestleMania match
because of who he wrestled, or
I think he said it in an interview like a long time ago, so I don't remember all the ins and outs, but it more or less just came down to he just wasn't happy with the match. And I kind of don't blame him because, you know, every time that I've seen this match, like I really, believe it or not, I really enjoyed the Survivor Series match where this whole feud started.
Yeah.
Actually, no, the feud didn't start from this. It started from Backlund getting pinned by Bret Hart on Monday Night Raw.
Right.
And they shook hands and all that. And then, Backlund was already kind of going berserk.
Yeah.
And I think he clocked him and he hit him with the chicken wing. But I think it all really started with I'm going off of pure memory from this because I remember there was an interview that he had with one of the reporters from WWF magazine. He went berserk and gave him the chicken wing, and I think that was all kind of like, "Oh, well, you're kind of old, you're not really winning any matches, and you lost to the Iron Sheik."
Right.
And Backlund resented that, put the dude in the chicken wing, and, you know, all the guys in the suits had to come out and, you know, break Backlund from the chicken wing. And then he came face-to-face with Arnold Skullin, the man who threw in the towel.
That's right.
During his match with the Iron Sheik, which cost him the World Wrestling Federation or
beat up on
Paul. Yeah, it was World Wrestling Federation at the time, World Heavyweight Championship. And then, you know, the fans got a glimpse that, you know, he never really got over that. And then he had the match with Bret Hart on Raw. Bret Hart pinned him fair and square with a small package, I believe. And Backlund, you know, shook his hand and then got him in the chicken wing. And then that segued into the whole Survivor Series 94 angle with the throw in the towel match. Owen was in the corner of Mr. Bob Backlund and British Bulldog sleeping on the job.
Right.
In the corner of Bret Hart, and Bret Hart lost the title to Bob Backlund. I think he was in the chicken wing for like 5 minutes, and his mom threw in the towel for him, and then like a couple nights later, he lost the belt to Diesel.
In the garden, like 9 seconds.
Yeah, but I think like by the time this I Quit match came around, like granted, I think like I Quit matches for a lot of guys are kind of tough, especially if they're not consistently using submissions in their match. And I think if I remember correctly, that's part of why Bret Hart had a hard time with this match, because him and Bob Backlund they had submissions as finishers, but they weren't doing submissions like throughout their entire match. You know, Bret Hart has his five moves of doom, and you know, Bob Backlund is known more as like a collegiate style wrestler. You know, he has that kind of background with the suplexes, grappling, you know, know-how, stuff like that. You know, they're not submission wrestlers, despite what a lot of wrestling fans would think. So I think that was like the catch for Bret Hart and Bob Backlund. Like, they just weren't, you know, they didn't have like all these submission holds. And, you know, keep in mind back then, you know, when somebody got somebody in a submission hold that wasn't like a Boston Crab or a figure four or something like that, it was more or less like a rest hold, you know, whether it's like an arm bar, a hammer lock, a wrist lock, whatever, you know, they're all rest holds. And, well, they're not totally rest holds. You know, you could still do damage on a guy, but, you know, for the purpose of, you know, building up high drama in a match, you know, submissions were just kind of meant to slow down the pace before it picked back up again.
Right.
So I think for both of these guys, this was a bit of a challenge. And for me, it was a challenge watching this match again.
Yeah.
Especially with how Bret Hart wins it.
Yeah, Bret goes for a sharpshooter early in the match, of course, and Backlund blocks it. Hart does the figure four. Backlund escapes again, tries to injure Hart's arm with an armbar hold. At one point, Backlund does try to perform the crossface chicken wing, like Dave mentioned, which is his signature move. Hart blocks him, performs the same hold on Backlund. Backlund made an unintelligible sound into the microphone, like, ah, probably trying to get him to quit. Yeah.
It was like the equivalent of like doctor handwriting.
Right. So Piper determined that he had submitted. So we don't know if he really submitted, but he was like, Yeah. So that was pretty much it. So I thought Piper was okay. I mean, it wasn't a terrible match. I just didn't like the way it ended. Like, I agree with you. It went almost 10 minutes, 9 minutes, 34 seconds.
Yeah, they could have done better, especially because they already had a submission match at Survivor Series 94. So, like, you know, if you were a smart fan, you knew Bret Hart was going to get over. But, you know, for what both of these guys have to offer, this match could have been better.
Right, exactly.
But it just goes to show, hey, Bret Hart can't have a match with everybody. And I've been saying that from the start.
Yeah,
I enjoy Bret Hart. I'm not a fan. I'm not a big fan. Well, let's put it this way. I'm not a big fan. I enjoy watching his work, but I'm not going to put Bret Hart over like some other people.
Yeah, you know what, dude? I've told you this before. I was never a big fan of him as a singles competitor, not even Shawn Michaels. And I know Shawn Michaels is great. He's a great performer. I just was at that time in my wrestling watching life, I was so... This was like 95, so I'm like right out of high school, and I'm like getting all these tapes from Japan, and I'm like, you know, kind of like leaning towards WCW, even though I'm a WWF guy forever. Like, yeah. I was really not into them and some of this stuff. Like, when, and you're right, these guys don't have 5-star matches with every single person. I thought Bret Hart and Austin were great.
No.
I thought Hart and Austin were great. I thought Michaels and Vader were great. I thought Mankind and Bret and Shawn Michaels was great. Bret Hart and Yokozuna were great. I thought just a contrast. So again, guys, and I'm not trying to shit on them. I think, but I have to agree with you when I say these guys didn't have 5-star matches every single night like people put them over to be. I'm sorry.
You know, at this time, and even, you know, going into, you know, this WrestleMania for the last couple years, you know, I would say Shawn Michaels was having much better matches than Bret Hart.
Oh, yeah. I think Shawn Michaels, but you know what? In Shawn's defense, he had more to prove at that point. Because at that point, Bret was the golden child after Hogan left. So
Bret Hart was in line for the championship. He won it. You know, he beat Flair in, what was it, 93?
Yeah.
So, no. It was like late 92.
Late 92, yeah.
So, you know, Bret Hart was the guy because they didn't want to have like some steroided out guy as a champion.
Right.
Which was a shock for a lot of people that he won the championship as quick as he did, despite being in the company for as long as he was. But a lot of people just didn't see Bret Hart as the guy. He wasn't that charismatic. He still had it. Don't get me wrong. Bret Hart has it, whatever it is. But for a lot of fans, like for me,
I enjoyed him as Intercontinental Champion, but I always felt for Bret Hart, he had to be in the ring with somebody that he had chemistry with. You know, he wasn't, you know, as much as Bret Hart, you know, made fun of Ric Flair for being robotic, and, you know, Flair did the same, but Flair could go in the ring with, you know, majority of guys and have a great match.
Right.
Didn't matter who the fuck he was going against. Still, Flair would have some shitty matches.
Right.
But for the track record, you know, Flair had better matches than Bret Hart.
Right.
Bar none.
All right. So your next match was for the WWF Championship. Challenges Shawn Michaels with his bodyguard Sid, accompanied to the ring by MTV's Jenny McCarthy. Yeah, she was pretty hot. And then
I was a Jenny McCarthy fan over Pam Anderson at this time.
Yeah, me too. Diesel obviously accompanied by champion escorted by Pamela Anderson.
Which was the big deal because everybody's where's Pam? Where'd she go? She wasn't around for the majority of the show. So Shawn Michaels is like, oh, she's just too shy. She'll be escorting me down to the ring. You know, don't worry about it.
And they both wore skanky dresses, and their fake titty nipples were pointing out like ridiculous.
I love it.
Yeah, I loved pointy fake nipples. They were awesome.
And I'll say this. This is when, you know, looking back on it now, like, shit, you know, Pam Anderson looked so fucking fine back then. Granted, I was always a Jenny McCarthy guy, but upon watching WrestleMania 11 again, I got to give the Duke to Home Improvement's own Pam Anderson. But she looks like she fell down a few flights of stairs these days.
Yeah. On a side note, Pam Anderson was a big discussion of ours in the Raya house.
For the tape?
For the tape. I don't remember the year the tape came out. Well,
it had to be sometime around.
It was in February of that year that they got married, but I don't know when the tape came out. I remember my dad had gotten sick in 97. And right when he got sick, I got the tape right after it came out. I got the tape when it came out, and then I lent it out. I never saw the tape. I got the tape from somebody, lent it out, didn't get it back. It's like a year later at a friend's house, right?
Wow.
So now my father gets sick. He moves to New England, and this is great.
His dying wish was to see
the tape. No, he didn't die yet. He died 4 years later. But
okay.
He had a really bad, really, really bad medical schedule. Like, his kidneys were failing. And he had, like, dialysis 3 times a week.
And his doctor recommended he needs to watch
No, his doctor, my dad had, like, insomnia. Because he'd go, like, 4 hours at a clip, and then he couldn't sleep. So he would sleep at these crazy hours. So he was missing all his sports games and shit. So I was mailing him, like, videotapes of, like, baseball games and basketball and shit. Like, he couldn't get in New York. I'd mail him, like, the Yankees and the Knicks. And I sent him the Pamela Anderson tape, you know. So, I did not label it. I did not label it for specifically so he would know it's not one of his sports tapes. So my dad's old school. My dad would never talk on the phone. He would like briefly leave you a message if he was whatever, or he didn't like talk on the phone. He'd leave me a message. But so I have my own phone. I still lived at home at this point. I come home one night and my machine's blinking, and my dad left like a 10-minute message. We had tapes back then, kids. This wasn't digital, okay? He left me a message about Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee on a boat. And he goes, and I can quote, I wish I still had the tape. He's like, did you see the size of Tommy Lee's hammer? He goes, how did she take all of that?
Damn.
Like, he carried on about the fucking dude. It was so funny.
You know, as soon as you said hammer, guess who comes into the chat room?
Tony C, look at that.
Black Grooms.
Jason Groom, my boy Groomsy's in the chat room. This is a hot chat room tonight, kids. So
I don't know how Pam could handle the Black Hammer.
Dude.
Besides Tommy's hammer.
Tommy's fucking schlong was the size of Thor's hammer. So I don't know how the fuck she took that all in. He was painting her pancreas with legit.
Well, what was it?
when was it? Not too long ago, there was an article, I think, in Rolling Stone on the guy who got the tape. Do you know the backstory on the tape?
Yeah, yeah. Someone got the tape, and wasn't they?
It was an electrician that was working at the house who happened to work in porn on the side.
Yeah.
And, you know, he would go there, and I think he was I think he was dealing with a safe of theirs that had like all their like you know, priceless jewels or whatnot,
and a videotape of them fucking on a boat.
Yeah, videotape was in there. There was something happened. I think like Tommy Lee like bitched him out or something like that. And this electrician dude is like, shit, you know, I'm here all the time. These people are drugged out of their fucking minds. Because he, what was it? They were like in the Rolling Stone article. You know, sorry to get off track, but it's totally relevant. It is relevant to the event, because this is part of the reason why Pam Anderson was so popular too.
Yeah, because she had lips like a parachute, like Graham said. And Mr. X would let Pam shit on my chest back in the day.
Fuck. yeah, now it looks like somebody shit on her chest these days. But anyway.
Talk about a Cleveland steamer, huh?
Yeah.
Anyway,
so,
go ahead.
It looks like, what was it? So the dude, like, he's there all the, this electrician dude who's like a porn star too. He's there all the time. He's like, shit, you know, they're spending ridiculous amounts of money on drugs. Because in the Rolling Stone article, it brought up how Pam threw a birthday party for Tommy Lee that year, and they spent like 20 to 30 grand on drugs for the party.
No way.
Yes. Yeah, it's confirmed.
Yes, I know.
That Rolling Stone article that they spent 20 to 30 grand on drugs for a birthday party. So this, you know, schlub who's, you know, their electrician or whatever the fuck he's doing says, you know, fuck, you know, I think he was like hurting for cash. Like he, like whatever money he was making, it just wasn't enough. The guy already had like a shitty background, hung around with the wrong crowd. So he's like, you know what? I know that they got that tape in there. I'm going to take it and I'm going to shop it around and make some cash off of this. And you know what? The guy made nothing from that tape. Everybody else made money off of that tape except for the guy that found it, that painstakingly put together a plan to go into their home, literally steal the tape from their safe, and the dude didn't make any money off of it. Ain't that some shit. So if you want to read up about the full story on the tape, it's really interesting.
Yeah, I want to read that article. All right, so the match wasn't terrible. I thought the match was okay. I'm not a big fan of any of these guys, especially Kevin Nash. Never liked Kevin
Nash. It was the match of the night.
It was the match of the night, though. It was really good. At one point, HBK capitalizes on his aerial moves, doing a flying crossbody, a flying bulldog, did an elbow drop. Of course, didn't get the pin on Diesel. Tried to do a sleeper hold to hold Diesel down. Then they took the brawl outside. Michaels performs a super kick, but
reverse crescent kick.
I'm sorry, Dave. The reverse crescent kick. But Sid had the referee distracted, so couldn't get the pinfall. He had him pinned. Diesel was out, like a 10 count. Diesel, of course, now recovers, obviously, because the ref is now able to come back. Controls the remainder of the match, gets a couple of moves in, hits his patented jackknife, and then gets the pinfall victory at 20 minutes and 35 seconds. Longest match of the night and the match of the night. And I just thought that, you know, it was well orchestrated, you know, the whole ref thing and them doing the outside stuff. And Diesel actually ate a lot of the match. Sean made him look really, really good, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely did.
Yep.
Because, you know, keep in mind, Diesel is, I believe it's official, like he was actually the worst drawing champion for the WWF.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that had it for a significant amount of time, you know, not like one of these Jack Swaggers or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But dudes that, you know, they were given the belt, they were given it for a while, but he is considered one of the, if not the worst drawing champion for the WWF. WWE now.
Yep. And that brings us to our main event of the evening. The Beast from the East, Scott Charles Bam Bam Bigelow, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, taking on
New Jersey's own.
Arguably the greatest player in his position still, even though he's retired, Lawrence Taylor.
You know, it's not hitting me now. It's not hitting me until now that Bam Bam is from New Jersey. And Lawrence Taylor is playing for a football team in New Jersey.
Yeah, well, they're from New York to play in Jersey, which is why I won't root for the Giants or the Jets, but that's besides the point. Anyway, so so now, of course, Lawrence Taylor has his cavalcade of NFL stars with him.
The All-Stars.
The All-Stars. We'll get in, and they all wore matching T-shirts, which was cute. He had Ken Norton Jr., of the 49ers and the Dallas Cowboys fame, Chris Spielman, Ricky Jackson, Carl Banks, which is my favorite, one of my favorite Giants.
The minister, he wasn't the father from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
No, sir. No, it was Philip Banks.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah. And, of course, the Minister of Defense, Reggie White.
He was the team captain of Lawrence Taylor's All-Stars.
He was a spiritual guidance, too, because they called him he was a minister. And they called him the Minister of Defense, Reggie White. All these guys are Hall of Famers. And, of course, Steve, I'm not Mongo yet, McMichael. So now, Vince.
Wait, I want to throw in a little fun fact.
About the team?
About Mongo McMichael. You know, everybody knows him as a WCW announcer. But he actually first called a professional wrestling match on Monday Night Raw. If I remember correctly, it was the week before WrestleMania 11. And he debuted as a wrestling announcer on Monday Night Raw.
I don't remember it, but I'm sure it happened.
It definitely happened. I remember it because I was like, when he came to WCW, I was like, oh, wow, he decided to continue calling wrestling. Which was, Nitro didn't start until September of 95. Because it was the same year.
Yep.
So that's why I was like, wow. Like, that's why, like, when Mongo first came on the scene, I was a fan of his. I didn't start hating Mongo until, until he switched as a wrestler.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Then I was like, all right, that's enough.
Yeah, I don't want to make this a Mongo hate fest. You know how much I hate Mongo.
Yes.
But for me, I hated this match. Well, Vince McMahon does the announcing of the Million Dollar Corporation team, which is Bundy, Tatanka, IRS, Kama, and Nikolai Volkoff.
Yeah.
To prevent the corporation members from interfering. That's why Taylor had his guys. And of course, I, again, loved Bam Bam Bigelow, still do. Seeing this as a 19-year-old just disturbed me. And I was like, man, this ain't right. This is Bam Bam Bigelow. He's the Beast from the East. Japan, NWA. Like, I remember him fighting Barry Windham on for the U.S. title. Like, I cringe every time I saw this. And I got pissed off that this happened. And I still get pissed off when they put the celebrities over because I think, like, it's...
For me as a kid, you know, 11 years old, I was still, you know, like...
impressionable.
This was, like, my teeter-tottering of becoming smart. But still, like, as a wrestling fan, you want to see a wrestler get the better of an outsider.
Right.
Didn't matter that Lawrence Taylor was a great football player. Didn't matter How many Super Bowl rings he had, didn't matter what team he played for. When he was in the wrestling ring, as a wrestling fan, I wanted to see the wrestler win.
I totally agree.
I was of a different mindset for Hogan and Mr. T, but Lawrence Taylor was a totally different bag, and I was very anti, how can I call it, you know, the sports idol and stuff like that. I was getting into my punk rock years at this time, and, you know, dudes that were mega successful in one arena trying to get over in, you know, something that I consider my sport, you know, I'd be pissed at that. And I think, you know, I would totally understand why not just a wrestler, but a wrestling fan would be livid over the fact that, you know, a sports guy, you know, regardless of what his credentials are, coming into a completely new arena, figuratively and literally, and he gets the Duke over a legit badass.
Yeah, anyway. So Salt and Pepper was the musical guest for Lawrence Taylor.
Which is edited out of the network version,
right. But they do What a Man, if you have the videotape, which I still do somewhere. I don't have the Coliseum video with the Gorilla Monsoon, Jim Ross stuff. I do have
While they're singing along with Salt and Pepper.
Right. I got... Well, then that's... That's funny. But Bigelow comes out. This is great. And their stage is set up right above the rink, the entranceway. And Bigelow stands there, and the girls are like, you know, they're booing and hissing at him. So he goes to like do a flinch on him,
and punks him out.
Yeah, and they all jump back and insult, like, oh, like hold me back, I'm gonna hit him. Like, it's all ghetto on him and shit. And I'm saying to myself, dude, he would knock the fucking weave off of your nappy head.
Yo, he would gorilla press slam Peppa into the crowd.
You just don't touch Spinderella because that's my boo. All right, I had a love of Jones for her when I was a kid.
All right,
I don't want to fair do enough. I want to do terrible things to her for some reason. She was just delicious looking. But anyway,
here's another fun fact for you.
Go ahead.
No, like Salt and Pepper had a big hit with What a Man.
Of course,
but I don't know if people know this. It's actually a cover. What a Man is actually originally performed by a white woman named Linda Lindell.
Yeah, but not the rap, just the hook.
Yeah, just the hook. Of course, still,
I knew that. I don't think our throwbackers knew that, but I knew that.
Yeah, but they got the whole hook from a song called "What a Man," from a white woman named Lindell, who, believe it or not, I actually found out about this several months ago because I have the entire Stax Records singles collection.
You want to hear a little bit of it? I have it.
You have it? All right, we can play it.
Yeah, give me one second. I'll pull it up.
I had the entire Stax Records singles collection on my iPod, and I decided to start going through it because I, you know, bought all of these tracks, and I just it's like 10 discs a set. There's like 3 different sets.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I hear this song, I'm like, I don't remember having Salt and Pepper. But right. It's Linda Lindell.
Right.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yes, grooms, I did say nappy headed hoe. Shut up, Bernard, you jerk. Here's my imus for you. Move a worm, baby. Uh, 9 o'clock here. Don Imus. Linda Lindell. Nappy headed hoes. Shut up, Bernard, you jerk. Yep, so that's Linda Lindell's version from 1968 on Stax Records,
yeah.
Which I have that same CD. Okay.
Yeah, this is a throwback, a real throwback.
That's
for
a
you.
Real throwback for you.
But I want to ask you this concerning the LT Bam Bam match. You know, the whole storyline was that, you know, Bam Bam, you know, got pinned during the big tag title match against, was it Spark Plug Holly and... And the 1-2-3 kid at the Rumble,
yes,
which,
yes.
You know, obviously the Smoking Guns won the titles the next night. But Bam Bam still was the fall guy. Lee Majors.
That's
That's right.
And Lawrence Taylor was in the front row. You know, there was a scuffle there. And, you know, they said Diesel was training Lawrence Taylor for the match.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's another reason why Lawrence Taylor sucked.
So, legit, what did you think of Lawrence Taylor's wrestling ability for this one match?
You know what? For the one match, looking back at it, it wasn't the worst performance I've ever seen. Because I would be really ignorant as a Bam Bam Bigelow fan to say that Lawrence Taylor didn't at least look good. Because you know what? He tried. You know what? And the match went, like, I think, like, almost 13, yeah, it went 11 minutes, I was going to say 13 minutes, 11 minutes, 42 seconds, right?
And that match went longer than, you know, some other matches on this card, right, with better wrestlers.
And you know Pat Patterson had to be involved in it because he likes all those big men in big matches, so he was a special guest referee.
I think in that kind of situation, you know, he's been around long enough, granted, I'm sure, you know.
Well,
Hebner could have been good or something like that, but
no.
Celebrities are involved.
Right, that's why, because he was involved in the whole Mr. T thing as well. And Patterson, at this point, still had the book, too, I think, with Vince.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Patterson always did the whole celebrity thing, so, and plus he liked those big men thinner.
Plus, you know, this, I think they may have even mentioned it during the commentary that, like, oh, he was the referee for the main event of WrestleMania 1, so this was kind of like...
Yeah, that's what I said.
Technically, it's like, you know, granted, 10 is literally the 10th year anniversary, but, you know, this is the first WrestleMania in the new decade.
Right.
So it was kind of apropos that he was the referee.
And Todd Pettengill...
For the first WrestleMania, you know, going into a new decade.
Yeah, and Todd Pettengill may actually... May, I just, if you guys are listening right before I started the show, I played a five-minute clip of the pre-show that I got, and Todd Pettengill actually makes reference to that being the first pay-per-view of the new decade. So, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
A new generation.
The new generation. That's exactly what he said. So, getting back to Lawrence Taylor. All right, so he gets an early advantage, does a really sloppy clothesline, knocks Bam Bam out of the ring, he gets back in, Bigelow takes control, gives him a kicking LT repeatedly, then he gives him a Boston Crab, which I marked out for, even at my cubicle. I'm like, yeah, he did a fucking love it, man. Bigelow doing a Boston Crab. Of course, Taylor gets out of it and throws a suplex, which wasn't too terrible.
That fake jackknife of his.
Right. Bigelow does several of his patented headbutts. Now, here's where it gets interesting. LT does a moonsault flip, right?
Yeah.
And then Taylor begins taking control again. Bigelow kicked him in.
Wasn't it Bigelow that did
Bigelow, I'm sorry, Bigelow does the moonsault, right? It was kind of sloppy, but then Taylor gets, Taylor didn't sell it. So he takes control of the match. Bigelow hits him with an enziguri, and then hits him with a headbutt from the top rope. Now, at this point, you think Bigelow's going to win the match because that's one of his finishes.
Yeah.
The flying headbutt. And plus, he's 360 pounds. But Taylor kicks out.
I should have bricked when that happened.
I was like, I was so pissed. I was pissed again yesterday watching it. Taylor does, he climbs to the second rope, jumps off, uses a forearm to hit Bigelow, and then wins.
He hits him with two forearms, and then he goes to the second rope.
Yes. It was just bullshit, man. I was like, oh, my God.
I know Chico Santana won some matches with a forearm, but LT, like, come on. Like, he gets hit with a diving headbutt, kicks out, which, you know, at that point in time, you know, dudes weren't really kicking out of Bam Bam's diving headbutt. Right. And he just hits him with a few forearms, which is, like, nowadays, like, a forearm is not a big deal because, you know, especially if you're watching Japanese pro wrestling where they still observe that closed fists are illegal, guys are using the forearms. So to see that go down, I was kind of like, because I think everybody knew LT was going to win, but they just really didn't want him to win.
So, and there's your WrestleMania. Here's some of the stuff after. This is now from Wikipedia. Here's the aftermath. Shortly after WrestleMania, Diesel offered Shawn Michaels a rematch. Michaels blamed Sid for the loss. Sid gets angry, attacks Michaels. Diesel makes the save. They become allies again. They win a tag team championship, like you mentioned before. Diesel feuds with Sid at the very first In Your House 1 and 2. They didn't face each other again until September 11th of 95 on Raw. Bigelow was embarrassed, obviously, by losing to Lawrence Taylor. To redeem himself, he challenges Diesel for a championship match. During the match, Tatanka turns on Bigelow, causing him to get pinned. Bigelow was kicked out of the shitty million-dollar corporation, was attacked by all the goons. Of course, now Diesel saves the Bigelow. They have a tag match. Bigelow did defeat Tatanka in a dark match in Your House, too. At King of the Ring 95, Sid became a part of DiBiase's shitty corporation. Team with Tatanka, and they lost to Diesel and Bam Bam. Let's see. Comet, like you mentioned, did melt down the urn to make a necklace out of it. That was pretty cool. Smoking Guns, like we mentioned again, did get the tag team titles back. Lost them again, whatever. Now, one more thing to attribute to why they had it in Hartford. The total gate for this was $750,000, which was down from the previous attendance and money from last year. But that could have attributed to the venue of WrestleMania 11, which was Hartford, Connecticut. I'm going to go with the fact that it was because of the whole steroid thing and they were close to home. So I'll go with that theory.
Yeah, it just seemed like, I really got to, look into it. But I know as far as I remember, they were really hurting in 95. There was a point where they were, them closing down was actually a possibility. So I'm pretty sure it was around this time. So I think, as we discussed, it was just more of like a money kind of thing. And
right.
It's kind of like, well, if we go bigger, than this, especially, I'm actually very surprised to read now that it was only 15,000 fans, that they made less than $1 million in admissions, because this was all over the place. Like, I can't get that across any more than I have on this show. It was all over the place. You could not ignore it. Like, if you were not a wrestling fan, you knew about it.
Yeah, of course.
And you had an opinion on it, too.
Well, the hype machine was out, and they did a really good job. They still do. And
yeah.
Even in this day and age, even though the product sucks, but...
I don't know. As far as I'm concerned, that could have been the saving grace for this WrestleMania, that they had LT in the main event.
No, it absolutely was. It was, Dave. Not to cut you off, I'm sorry, but it was the saving grace.
Yeah. Because this was definitely not a good time for WWF. just judging by the gates for not just this WrestleMania, but the one before it and the year after that, there weren't huge runs. A lot of people want to put 95 behind them. I know a lot of fans want to shit on LT versus Bigelow, just because it was a professional football player getting over on a wrestler. But at the end of the day, if you're truly smart to wrestling, you're always going to put the baby face over the heel at the big event,
right?
Because it is the payoff after all,
right?
And regardless of Bigelow jobbing, guess what? Wrestling fans are going to rally behind Bigelow even stronger. So when LT is gone and, forgotten, people are going to be backing up, Bam Bam Bigelow. And that's what at the end of the day, if it's just another means of not just the WWF getting, fans to, buy in for a gimmick match, that's fine. But guess what? It's helping out Bigelow for the fact that he jobbed out, because first of all, wrestling fans are going to buy it anyway. They're going to pirate it. They're going to watch it regardless. And they're going to, boost Bigelow, who became a face anyway. There you go.
Yeah, that's pretty much
so
it.
Don't completely shit on LT, because he helped out the WWF.
Yeah, Scott made a good point. Scott's a good point. Bigelow was the first big show.
Yeah. And, gave Bigelow, just the fact that Bigelow was the guy that they put into this position, who the hell would think that Bigelow would main event at WrestleMania in the first place?
Right.
So for all you hardcore wrestling fans, if this was the only opportunity for Bam Bam Bigelow to main event of WrestleMania, then you better thank LT and, you know, his crack habit or whatever happened afterwards.
Yeah, rest in peace.
That he was there to give Bam Bam Bigelow that opportunity, because otherwise he wouldn't have gotten it.
Right. Well, that's our show this evening.
Yeah.
I want to thank Uptown Georgie for calling in tonight. The show will be up on TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com in a few minutes. And a little while.
LT streak is still undefeated.
And Dave, any closing news and notes before we head out?
I think I said everything that I could possibly could.
All right, Turnbuckle Throwback.
Except for
what?
Going back onto my eBay account at X Sticky Fingers X and buying all my Chikara DVDs.
All right. Well. TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, RantEMRadio.com, Stitcher, iTunes, Audio Boom, Buzzsprout, GeekLifeRadio.com every Saturday evening. And that's pretty
much
where we are.
You know who's on Stitcher and Audio Boom as well as us?
Who's that?
Melina from WWE.
Yep, and so is our boys, Thumbstick Ninjas. Check them out, thumbstickninjas.com. That's our boys, too. They're supporters of the show. We support them. Good stuff. All right, so that's pretty much it, man. Next week is another episode of WrestleMania as the month continues. We got two more to go, I believe.
Yeah.
And we'll be doing 9 next week, right?
9.
WrestleMania 9.
The Guilty Pleasure.
Right, Jim Ross's debut. On a pay-per-view for the
world's biggest toga party.
That's right, Bobby Heenan and the Camels. All right, guys, have a great
Bobby Heenan and his camel toe.
Have a great rest of your week. Take care of yourselves, each other. Don't get arrested. Avoid the clap. Hug your mom, and stay fly. Right?
Yeah, for a white guy.
That's right. All right. Good night, kids.